tripped in towards Lewandowski!
Magnificent from Cristiano Ronaldo!
Harry Kane, 1-0 England!
Ibrahimovic! Oh, he certainly made the most of that!
You're listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast.
Hello, I'm Rob Daly. Today on the podcast, we preview the UEFA Euro 2016 final.
And as he thought about coming, and didn't. And Portugal go in front. Who else but Cristiano Ronaldo?
And Pogba has lifted it in, away by Neuer, and poked in by Griezmann! Paris, brace yourself! They're coming! They're surely coming, the French!
European football journalists Chris Parrott and Tom Keller here to discuss Portugal versus France. We hear from the big name players on the podcast too. Portugal captain Cristiano Ronaldo and the tournament's top scorer Antoine Griezmann. Chris, we're outside today.
We are.
In Paris.
A distinctly French feel. We're right next to a Petanque court. We couldn't be more French. Thank heavens we're in the shade because I haven't got any sun cream on. Otherwise, I would be extremely red by the end of this podcast.
Too. If someone does come and try and play a game of Petanque, do we tell them to go away?
No, it would add to the ambience of the podcast.
Okay.
Maybe I'll tell you what, maybe we could do the podcast whilst playing Petanque.
That's a bit too adventurous, I think. But Tom Kelly's a multi-skilled man. Tom, you've come back from Lyon. With a little bit of colour?
You're probably a bit too much, a bit more than intended, really. I turned up in jeans and shoes and a large rucksack in Lyon and proceeded to walk around the town for 4 hours, and it was approximately 300 degrees. So I got a little burnt.
You're pulling it off, mate. I wouldn't worry about it at all. It is, of course, our show to preview the UEFA Euro 2016 final. Mark Clattenburg, Tom, as well, is our referee for the final.
Yeah, he's had an excellent year, obviously. I suppose England's early exit spells good news for some individuals. And he did excellently in the Champions League final, didn't he? So I'm sure we can look forward to another smooth game from him.
OK, well, let's start our preview by talking about France, who managed to get past Germany with a 2-0 victory. Here's a reminder of how they booked their spot in Marseille.
What an opportunity. Their man of the month, their star of the tournament, Antoine Griezmann drives it in! And Marseille is ablaze with joy! France may be going all the way! Oh, pounced upon here by Pogba. Kimmich dallied inexplicably. And Pogba's lifted it in, away by Neuer, and pumped in by Griezmann! Paris, brace yourself!
A wonderful atmosphere in Marseille as France booked their place in the final, much like they did in the FIFA World Cup back in 1998, much like in Euro back in 84 when they were the hosts as well. Tom, they just seem to relish being the host nation of this tournament.
You didn't know this, Rob, but I've actually been swatting up on some stats today about exactly
you
this.
You are joking.
No, I didn't even know you were going to ask this. I've not read the running order.
And, you never do.
It's actually 18 games. They are now unbeaten at home in final tournaments since the 1960 third place playoff, which, a little stat for you, is to the day on the 9th of July, the day before the final.
Oh, wow. Very good indeed. So France are pretty formidable at home.
In Marseille, they were absolutely... I thought they just did the job brilliantly. And Griezmann... It seems that every podcast that's gone by, we've said he's taken another step up. And he did it again. It's no secret that he's the man to watch for Portugal in the final now.
I thought they were very clinical against Iceland. Germany, for most of the first half, appeared to be the better side at least. They had all of the ball. They didn't really have too many chances though. And I think losing Mario Gomez turned out to be a massive blow for them. They didn't have someone who really looked like he would be able to finish a chance. Thomas Müller played through the middle. And France slowly but surely got to grips with them, I thought. And then the penalty was the decisive moment. Griezmann, having missed that one in the UEFA Champions League final, stepped up again, took it superbly. And actually the second half, until they were 2-0 up and probably through when Germany had a few chances, I thought France were much the better team. And just to echo Tom's opinion, Griezmann, fantastic for Atletico all season and now brilliant for France. He, you know, if there was the UEFA best player or the Ballon d'Or tomorrow, I think Anton Griezmann will be pretty high on the list.
Let's hear from him now.
Non, très, très heureux du niveau donné par.
Very happy with the level of performance from the team. We knew it was going to be difficult, but we coped well defensively, and we had an excellent keeper who made some excellent saves. In attack, we tried to create chances and score goals, and now we're in the final.
Six goals for Anton Griezmann, almost certainly to win the Golden Boot. Some notes, Germany had 65% possession. Stefan Potter, the German reporter for UEFA.com, said that much of the German press was saying the national team lacked someone who could score chances like Griezmann, and built the tabloids saying that losing Gomez, Hummels, Khedira and Boateng during the game was a massive loss. Tom, actually, at the start of the tournament, was talking about Mario Gomez being an important player. I don't think we quite expected him to be so crucial in a way to the German team.
Speak for yourself, Rob.
Here he goes.
I think he just provided that focal point for the, you know, the more fluid forwards behind him. Yeah, Thomas Müller, he's had a very disappointing tournament. I'm not sure, it sounds perverse to say this, considering how long Joachim Löw has been in charge and how influential Müller's been for most of that time. I'm not sure they really found his best role here. I'm not sure how best to get the best out of him remains a mystery, and I think him as the focal point of the attack just didn't work.
I think he wanted an out-and-out striker, if you like, and Thomas Müller, certainly goal record is that, but he doesn't necessarily play in that position either for Bayern. It's Robert Lewandowski who is that main focal point. Had they scored when they were on top in the first half, we might be sitting here in the French sunshine talking about Germany in the final. But I think Didier Deschamps again got his tactics absolutely spot on, and actually he got his team selection. I was surprised Kante didn't start. I was half surprised that he backed Umtiti in defence ahead of the more experienced Rami. I thought both of those decisions to play Sissoko and to play Umtiti were absolutely spot on from Deschamps.
Some stats about Umtiti as well. 8 clearances during the game, 7 balls recovered, 2 blocks, and almost all of his 18 passes completed. It was a surprising performance. So Tom, looking ahead to the final, do you expect Didier Deschamps to change the starting 11 that started against Germany?
I think we all predicted that Kante would come back in, and Deschamps went the other way, and as Chris says, he's proven us wrong. That's probably why he's paid the big bucks. I don't think he'll change anything. That Umtiti against Ronaldo battle, Barcelona-Real Madrid battle for next season.
Sure.
If Ronaldo's on his game, I would be worried that Umtiti might not be able to stand up to him, I think. But I think Deschamps will keep the same 11. I'd be very surprised if he changes anything.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think if he was going to change the system and the personnel, it would have been for the semi-final. I think France, having had less of the ball against Germany, will have more of the ball than Portugal. What's impressed me is that in multiple formations now and personnel, Deschamps has managed to get Griezmann central. He didn't start this tournament centrally. Since he's gone there, behind Giroud, he's been amazing.
Since half-time against the Republic of Ireland.
Exactly. Yeah. He subsequently scored 5 goals. But with different players, and I think that's why Sissoko may be playing slightly out of position, but he does a job there and it enables Griezmann to be through the middle where he's absolutely lethal.
But will he not be concerned by the fact that Germany had so much of the ball in the first half? I mean, Germany looked, you couldn't say they were creating clear-cut chances, but they were certainly dominating possession and made France look uneasy.
Made them look uneasy, but there's more than one way to win a match, and possession is one of them. And tactically, that was the way France set up. You see a lot of teams doing that now against teams who are very comfortable with the ball. Look at the way Simeone's Atletico play, for example. So, for me, Lloris didn't have too many great saves to make. So, whilst Germany looked silky and looked fantastic, they didn't score a goal, and that's what wins you football matches. France scored 2 and for me, deserved to go into the final.
The lineups have really developed as the tournament's gone on. You know, there's all this talk, isn't there, for every country before the tournament starts. What is this team going to be? Who's going to start? And it turns out that the squad is stating the obvious, but it's more important than that starting 11. There's bound to be changes. Horses for courses, depends on the opposition. And I think both managers, Santos and Deschamps, have played it absolutely perfectly. They've picked the right teams at the right times, and they've got their main men firing just when they needed it.
Does it not feel a bit harsh on Rami and Kante? Sure, they were only suspended for one game, and suddenly they lose their place in... I mean, Kante, for some people, had been France's outstanding performer.
There's no room for sentiment, is there? If they're out of the team for one game, the team performs without them, then you carry on as you were, I would say.
L'Equipe The sports paper in France ran with the headline Ecstasy on their front page after the victory. And we saw pictures of the fan zone as well in Paris. We've had them on UEFA.com as well. Chris, the French support now as we gear up to the final. We were talking actually in the early stages, maybe on the first or second podcast, there was quite a muted when they were winning games, but now that they know they're close to this trophy.
Yeah, I think Tom called it a Parisian call. I mean, if we were doing this podcast 10 hours before, there would still be the car horns blaring. It was loud in Paris. It actually felt like they'd won the final. There was 100,000 people in the fan zone near the Eiffel Tower. Those scenes were amazing. There was no traffic moving on the Champs-Élysées after that. There was a real sense, and I think Didier Deschamps spoke about it, of lifting the public mood in France. And this football team has done it. There's been, you know, plenty of things, as we know, particularly in this city, which have really hurt French society and French people. And I think this team and their achievements now, there is an outpouring of emotion which might just carry France beyond Portugal as well. And if it does, Champs-Élysées will be pretty packed again, I'm sure.
Yeah, certainly will be. Okay, next we're going to give you some of the must-have stats ahead of the final, and we'll be talking, of course, about Portugal.
Follow UEFA Euro 2016 on the go.
Not convincingly cleared, and there's Müller. Wouldn't you just know it?
It is Bale. It's a second for Wales.
Download the official app now.
Joining me now, Rob Esteva, statsman Rob Esteva. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
No problem.
We've been sat next to each other in the office in the International Broadcasting Centre for 5 weeks now.
We have. We've become quite close.
We're very close.
Yeah. I think you've been stealing my stats for the last 5 weeks.
Well, I knew this was going to come up because Rob produced one of my favourite stats at the tournament, where Ireland had 99% of the possession by the time they scored their opening goal against France. And I got a lot of retweets for that, Rob.
You did. And a lot of followers. Thanks.
Well, let's get you some followers here right now. Rob, for people who don't know, what exactly do you do on a day-to-day basis?
There's probably two main elements. One is in terms of the output for UEFA, so all the media content, all the stuff that goes on the website, podcasts, programmes, technical reports. And then there's a lot of technical-based content which goes specifically for the teams. Different level of data which goes to the teams, and we're checking, analysing live, and then obviously when everything gets delivered to the teams.
So the average
well.
Person like me, just an average football fan, wouldn't see a lot of that data would go to the teams.
Yeah, we've got a good degree of data that goes on UEFA.com and a lot of the outputs, but there's a level, especially the physical data, which just goes specifically for the teams.
We were talking before about something about Carl Walker, for example. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain to people that stat and why he was one of the best performing fullbacks at the tournament?
Yeah, one kind of standout example for us was Carl Walker, and specifically in the Wales game, where it was 46 sprints, which I think when you naturally think of a team, you'd think of maybe a Raheem Sterling as having the most sprints, for example. Yeah. But it was actually the fullback Carl Walker who had the most sprints. 50% of his passes were in the final third. It was giving us a lot of indication of how England were playing in terms of style, what one of their most dangerous aspects of their attacking play was.
As you're watching it, you can see that Carl Walker's maybe playing well, but you don't quite understand the full extent of it.
Exactly.
So would you say it's been a tournament for defensive-minded teams, that defensive-minded teams have come out on top in general?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the average goals per game, it's low. Doesn't mean I don't enjoy it, even if it's not the goals. I know maybe neutrals, maybe more so, looking just for goals. But it's been low, but if you appreciate that side of it, then it does tell you that defensively teams have come, they've been very, very well organised. Fitness levels have been superb. Those kind of elements is just bringing the top closer, well, the bottom closer to the top, really, in terms of the quality of the teams. The gulf's not so big anymore.
I mean, thinking to the UEFA Champions League this year, we saw Atletico do very well, and they've become arguably the best defensive club team in the world. Have we seen a bit of that mirrored in international football?
I would blame Diego Simeone for that. I mean, for a team like Atletico is that well drilled. You know, they've got the piece of the jigsaw, the unity within the team. Everyone complements each other. They've absolutely nailed it in the Champions League this year and in the league, and that's gradually improved over the last 5 years. So I think we've seen teams come in. We've seen obviously Leicester do this in the Premier League. Very little team rotation. Very fit team, good cohesion within the different units of the team. And so I think a lot of teams have come to the Euro, they've they've taken these kind of examples on board, and you know, we see a team like Iceland who've been able to follow on from that.
Yeah, how did they do so well?
The standout stat for me with Iceland was they played the same starting 11 every single game.
Very rare now to see that.
It's super rare. I mean, Spain also did the same, but they were the only two teams that did over the entire tournament, which was impressive. I was looking at the numbers. It was, you know, they had three of the quickest players in the tournament. Three of the top 20 players were in terms of like their top speed. Okay, that's a standout. They were the second tallest team. So physically, they had all, in terms of strength.
We saw that set of pieces, didn't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that was another element which I thought, okay, that works in their favour. And then in terms of fitness, you know, a good number of their players were in the top kind of echelon of players who were covering the most distance. So when you mesh all those things together, it's quite easy to see why a very difficult team to beat, difficult team to break down. And credit to them. They had a game plan and it paid off.
Yeah, it really did. Scoring against Iceland eventually was Anton Griezmann. Mm. And I suppose we, in terms of goals per game, we've had a low tournament, but we've got, you know, someone out there with six goals, almost certain to win the Golden Boot for the tournament as well. Yeah. And there's been records like that sort of broken.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got six. Nobody's ever got six other than Michel Platini. So when he got nine, so he's already, you know, and you can argue about the number of games played, but he's played six, which is to date, which is the same as the previous tournaments in the last five tournaments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a goals per game. We've had a standout player who's been scoring the goals. We've had, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo, who just, you know, potentially getting a bit of criticism early in the tournament, not meeting the immense levels we expect of him. But, you know, he's coming good at the right time, as he always does. And, you know, he's equaled Platini in terms of goals in the final tournaments. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see which one can outshoot the other one.
Is there a player, from what you've seen of the numbers and everything, who has been the outstanding performer of the tournament? Is that too tough to actually pin down on? I remember speaking to, maybe it was yourself, early in the tournament, about Dmitry Payet's stats in the early games, like chances created, and it was just off the chart, but he's faded a little bit.
I don't know whether fatigue's coming in. He has a little bit, but still his numbers are fantastic. Gareth Bale, another one who's absolutely excelled. The two Belgian chaps, De Bruyne and Hazard, they had very good numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably say those kind of players are the ones which, you know, combined, we have the player barometer on UEFA.com. These guys are kind of doing quite well at that level. So, yeah, I would probably... Dmitry Payet has been one who's...
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
And maybe he's been... That people weren't necessarily expecting that he would have quite been up there after a fabulous season with West Ham, but he's carried that over into the final tournament extremely well.
Rob, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
No problem, thank you.
For the best coverage and the latest news, follow the @UEFA Euro account on Twitter.
Rob Esteva, with all the big stats ahead of the final.
Fortunately, Robbie didn't take up too much time because we're rapidly running out of battery. I've just noticed.
On the podcast recording device.
Yes. And also,
and I just spilt my drink all over the table.
And Tom's notes.
Yeah, so we had to use Tom's notes to wipe up the mess. So sorry, Tom. Sorry about that. I'm sure it's all up there, isn't it? Anyway,
it's the first podcast that he's actually come prepared and now he's got nothing left.
Okay, let's talk about Portugal. Portugal getting a win over Wales. And Chris, Wales at times were very good in the first half, but it'd be hard to argue with Portugal earning their place in the final.
Ultimately, you couldn't really see Wales scoring. And, you know, we have to talk about the main man, Ronaldo. In one moment, he scored a goal that I think he is only capable of scoring. Okay, there's been some good headers in this European Championship, but to leap to over 7 foot, hang in the air that long, that is almost Ronaldo's trademark. And it was the defining moment. It was 0-0, and he came up with something exceptional. For me, you know, there's many great goals and great players who can dribble through people and score from 40 yards, but I don't think anyone could have done what Ronaldo did, and it opened the game up. And yeah, worthy winners. The Welsh party had to come to an end, but I think that was probably Portugal's best performance.
Let's remind ourselves of how Portugal got that 2-0 win.
Hennessy thought about coming and didn't. And Portugal go in front. Who else but Cristiano Ronaldo? a towering leap. Wales switched off and to their cost. Ronaldo! It's a second. Nani this time is able to follow up. Wales looking across to the near side, suspecting there was an offside, but the flag stayed down. And Portugal have doubled their lead in double quick time.
Tom, you were in Lyon for the victory for Portugal. What did you make to the way that Fernando Santos set out his team and how they got the victory?
I've actually just been asking the waiter for some tips after you got rid of my notes. I have nothing up here, as you say. What was the question, Rob?
It was, what did you think of Portugal?
I can answer that one. I thought that they, first half, they almost felt their way into the game. I think that at half time they almost realised, actually, we can win this. They've been so accustomed to, I wouldn't say playing for a point, certainly, but they'd struggled to get into the tournament, I think, from that opening game against Iceland. And I feel that they didn't really have sufficient belief at the start of that game. And I think the first 45 minutes, Gareth Bale threatened to really grab the game by the scruff of the neck. Yep. And he couldn't quite do it. And then Ronaldo showed him exactly how it was done. And absolutely, as Chris says, we can do all the tactical analysis out there. There was one man that won that game, and that was Ronaldo. Nobody else on that pitch would score that goal.
Well, it's worth noting as well that he broke another goal-scoring record, or equaled one anyway. Cristiano Ronaldo has as many goals at Euro finals as Michel Platini. That's 9. Here's what Ronaldo had to say on achieving another personal and team milestone with Portugal.
Things happen in a natural way. I don't look to break records. That happens naturally, not only here, but at my club as well, like in the Champions League, or when I surpassed Raul to become Real Madrid's highest scorer. I think these things are always good, but I'm not obsessed by them. Obviously, I'm happy. It's a part of my job. But the most important thing was how well the team played and believed until the end. All of us deserve the congratulations.
Ronaldo moving on to 3 goals in Euro finals. He played in the 2004 final as an 18-year-old, Chris, and he's certainly come a long way since then.
He has, and it was almost a defining image, wasn't it? Apart from Karisteas running off and celebrating for Greece, was Ronaldo in tears. Portugal at home. They've never won a major international competition. Everybody thought that was their best chance, or might be their best chance for a long time. Well, 12 years later, here we are, they're in another final. And Ronaldo talking to UEFA.com again in the build-up to this match, talking that actually everybody believes now that they can win it. He was talking about it'll be a huge achievement, but he says that he's got the belief, the people back home have got the belief. And also he mentions that the huge Portuguese population in Paris. It's bigger than, it's the biggest Portuguese population outside of Portugal. I think there's 250,000 people in Paris, over 1 million people in France. And there is that sense of maybe this is our time. And certainly Ronaldo in his interview, which you can see on UEFA.com, speaks about that. And the way he's speaking, you know, you don't write them off, or don't write him off.
Well, he seems to be a real captain now, and there was a piece of footage that was doing the rounds everywhere during the penalty shootout with Poland, where Jean Moutinho appeared to almost hide a little bit from the idea of taking a penalty. And Ronaldo says, it's caught on the mics, come on, take one, you take them well, if we lose, never mind.
Yeah, well,
you know, proper leader stuff we're seeing from him now.
Proper leader stuff. He wasn't asking, he was demanding. He was telling him, you're taking a penalty.
Yeah.
And then he said, look, it's not in our hands anymore, but rightly so. Jean Moutinho, we've seen him score free kicks from the edge of the box. He's surely better than a centre half or a right
absolutely.
Back having to come up. But also Ronaldo talking, of course, he's won absolutely everything as an individual and as part of a team at Real Madrid. But he's never won with his country, and one would imagine this is probably his last chance to do it.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that as well. And Fernando Santos, on something you were talking about there, Tom, he says, we have our way of playing and we don't care if it's pretty or not. We always have a game plan. And we've seen it, teams at this tournament with game plans generally have done a lot better.
Portugal have not been the most aesthetically pleasing team at the tournament. I don't think anyone, including themselves, could argue that. But they have their qualities. They looked, I think, fairly unflustered against Wales. Gareth Bale ran at them a few times. But apart from that, Hal Robson-Kanu memorably skinned Bruno Alves. That was one of the biggest threats Wales offered. But I think they did a very good job. And if Pepe returns, that's going to bolster them even further at the back. They have in Renato Sanches, they have a man who's just developed in 2 weeks, really. I mean, I know he got a big money move before the tournament. I'm sure in Portugal he was obviously known as this exquisite talent, but to the wider audience, in 2 weeks he's gone from unknown teenager to a real superstar.
And Nani looked really baffled when he'd scored.
Yeah.
Did he look confused by his scoring?
He was, I think he was probably worried about Ronaldo's reaction to him getting on the end of that shot.
What did you make to Lyon and the new stadium there, Tom?
It's a very interesting location. It feels like you were being driven to a farm or something.
It's very far out, isn't it?
Very far. And I was on a bus with, I would say, 70 or 80 Wales fans and one Portuguese fan who found little option other than join in every chant he could. So he was attempting to mouth the Welsh national anthem at one point. I don't think his Welsh was particularly good. He did sing Don't Take Me Home.
Good on him.
Yeah. So, I was sat there looking. I think they thought I was quite miserable because I didn't have a Wales shirt on and I wasn't singing every song. And I was the only one on the bus, including the one Portuguese fan.
Well, if you can't beat them, Tom, you have to join them. Let's talk about Wales a little bit and get some thoughts on their campaign as a whole. First, from Chris Coleman, the manager, but first, Joe Allen.
Yeah, we're hugely proud. Naturally, we're disappointed, as you'd expect. But, it's important we don't forget just what we've achieved here and the journey we have been on. Everyone in that dressing room, players, whether they're players or staff, can be hugely proud of what we've done. And just want to take this chance to say thanks to the fans as well. The support we've had out here and back home has been, you know, incredible. The sort of stuff that you dream of seeing as a little boy. We can use the wins, but also the defeats as motivation now going into that World Cup campaign. We want to make sure that this is the first of many sort of journeys that we can go on as a team.
Overall, I'm absolutely ecstatic with the team, with my staff. You know, 6 or 7 weeks together, we've never ever been, we're normally together for a maximum of 10 days. We've just been together for almost 2 months, so everything is new to us. What a performance from the team overall in the tournament. And I think as a country as well, I think we've added to the tournament, our supporters also, you know, so it's been a great experience.
You said all the time that this is part of the journey. Portugal has come into a lot of tournament experience. Is that what you want your players to take out of this?
You know, I think this is Portugal's 7th semi-final. They've been here before, they know what it's all about. We don't. It's our first tournament, you know. So the fact that, you know, we pushed hard and we pushed them all the way, there's lots of positives for us. There's loads to take back. We've got to make sure that this is, like I've said all along, this is not the end of a journey. I don't think it is. I think our players got more. I think this team's got more success in them. We've just got to make sure we go and get it.
Tom, you said, you know, and we're hearing Chris Coleman there speaking to Mark Pittman after the game. I think Wales know that there was an opportunity to win that game.
During the game, actually, there was Andy Murray was in a Wimbledon quarterfinal, and I actually referenced that in my live commentary and tried to do some tenuous comparison to a tennis match.
I'm sure it was excellent.
And said that the first half went to serve, perhaps Wales had a break point. That was the way I phrased it. So it was very even. Wales perhaps had the one sort of, they threatened half a point more than Portugal did. And yeah, maybe it was a missed opportunity, really. I don't think international semi-finals are going to come round all that often for Wales. They've obviously got a great platform to build on, but that was a great chance. And as I said earlier, I think Portugal, I'm not sure they were at their, you know, at their best in that first half. And if Wales had grabbed a goal, then you don't know what could have happened.
Chris, of course, they were without key personnel for the game as well.
They were, and I think it caught up on them. Ben Davis maybe at the back, less so, although James Chester was the man marking Ronaldo. Not that anybody apart from Superman would have been able to stop him scoring that goal. But I think Ramsey, if you look at every goal Wales have scored pretty much, Aaron Ramsey at some stage has been involved in the move. I think he enables Bale to get the ball in better positions. For me, Ramsey has been one of the best players at UEFA Euro 2016, and I think he was simply too big a miss for them. They brought in Andy King, they brought on Johnny Williams, who was the other potential replacement, but neither had the class really of Aaron Ramsey. And it'll be interesting to see now for Ramsey, because I think he's really stuck his head up as a top player. Everyone and Arsenal fans will tell you how good he is, but you don't always see it. And I think for Aaron Ramsey now, if he can build on this tournament, he could, if he plays like he has anyway, really be a very, very top midfielder.
Well, after the match in Lyon, in the press lounge at the stadium, Tom caught up with our Wales correspondent, Mark Pittman.
To keep up to date with the latest from UEFA Euro 2016, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.
So, Mark, thanks for joining us after the game. The end of a wonderful adventure for Wales.
I think the best way of summing it up is to look at it in two parts. You've got the football side and you've got everything that came with it. The football side, we always thought we had a chance of getting through the group. And then once you get to the last 16, knockout football, anything can happen. So to get the semi-finals, it's an incredible achievement on a football point of view. The second aspect of it, the support this team has had, the scenes we've seen in cities and stadiums where the anthem's been sung, all the support that we've had back in Wales, it's been absolutely incredible. And I don't think anybody expected it to snowball the way it did leading up to the semi-final. So yeah, collectively, on the field, off the field, it's been just an incredible experience.
As you say, it's been a very much a team performance, but there is one man who leads this team on the pitch, even without the captain's armband, Gareth Bale.
Yeah, of course, Gareth, he's a superstar, but he's a superstar when it comes to his footballing ability. When it comes to his modesty, his ego, he's not a superstar, he's an everyday man. And it's that sort of character that lifts the rest of the team. You watch him in any game, he'll do the defensive work, he'll track back, he'll work hard. It's all about Gareth Bale. He knows he's important to the side, he knows his qualities. A great example of him is the fact that he volunteers to do the press conferences every week, purely because he knows that other players don't like doing it and feel a pressure. And he feels that by him doing it, it can take the pressure off other members of the team.
And you mentioned the memories that the players will have forever. How about you personally? It must have been a pretty special summer.
It's been a wild ride. It has been pretty incredible. You know, I've been in a hugely privileged position to have so much access to the team and to cover my team in their first major tournament for 58 years. Didn't end quite the way the dream was supposed to end, but it's been a fantastic story and I'm just really proud that I was able to play a small part in it.
Tom, while we were playing that audio of you speaking to Mark Pittman, it was really nice to hear him at the end actually talk about how much it meant to him to cover the Wales national team this tournament. He told me that wasn't actually in the press lounge at the stadium.
No, I waited for him in a sort of tunnel next to the team bus, sort of between a car park and a gate, and then we spoke in a porter cabin. And I sort of, at the start, had to sort of make sure the door wasn't going to open. It was very glamorous, though. I mean, it was really great to go to that semi-final and sit in a porter cabin.
Chris, the Wales team anyway, and I'm sure Mark is enjoying this as well. Wales are back on home soil.
They are.
And they're getting a hero's welcome for what they've done.
Yeah, as you'd expect, really. I mean, they reached a semi-final. They'd never reached that in a major tournament. They're actually given a hero's welcome back in Brittany, in Dinard, where they've been staying. The locals have really taken to them, certainly by the pictures. And then, yeah, open top bus parade around Cardiff, and they fully deserve it. I think we can talk about the missed opportunity, which I think there was, because they weren't playing Germany or France, who have probably been the two outstanding teams, and it was Portugal. But still, to reach the last four was really what's, you know, that's what dreams are made of. They're a very small nation population-wise, and now they have to build upon it. First of all, qualify for the World Cup and go again. But the scenes in Cardiff are brilliant, and I think every Wales player and every Wales fan deserves it.
Okay, so that ties us nicely into the end of the show, the actual match-up itself and how we think the finals are going to go. Tom, what are your feelings on the nature of the match that we're going to see at the Stade de France? You'll be attending on Sunday.
I don't think Portugal deal in helter-skelter matches. I think they will feel their way into the game as always, and it's the old cliche of they need to see out that first 20 minutes. I think France are going to come racing out of the blocks, home soil, you know, final. They are going to be right at it, and if Portugal can not go behind in perhaps the first half an hour, and certainly I think if they get to half time, just similar to Wales really, if they can get to half time on level terms, I think Portugal have got a real chance. And I can see Ronaldo, I can just see him producing the goods. He, every single time the encounter gets bigger, he produces, and he has done for a decade. I'm going to say if France score in the first 30 minutes, they'll win. If they don't, Portugal will win.
And Didier Deschamps, you have a nice stat about Didier Deschamps as well.
I do, yeah. Thanks, Rob. It was it was on my notes, so if I get the years wrong, then that's
it's my fault.
Your fault for using them as a cloth. Didier Deschamps could actually be the first person to win Euro as both a player and a coach. Bertie Vogts has done it previously as a player in the 70s, but he didn't actually play in when West Germany won it. And then he won it as a coach in 96, of course, in England. And Dino Zoff got to the final as a coach in 2000, but lost to France, of course.
You have been doing your homework today as well. Chris, how do you see the game going? We'll get predictions shortly, but I mean, the nature of the match itself.
I don't think either team will change the way they've played, really. I think Portugal naturally have been quite defensive. Certainly, it's been about protecting their goal first and foremost, and it's been very successful at that. I think France, we've already mentioned, probably name an unchanged team. And they'll try and get Payet and Griezmann on the ball in dangerous positions. And that's where the game will be won and lost. I can't wait to see Pogba against Sanchez. I think they're too young, very different in height, but quite similar in the way they burst forward. Yeah. They're powerful. Really interesting to see too. You know, Pogba's achieved a lot, but he is still a young footballer. It's a huge night for France. I felt against Germany, they didn't seem to feel the pressure. And I think they did early on in this tournament when they played, you know, only just beat Romania on the opening night, Albania in their second group game. They've grown as the competition's gone on. And if they don't feel the pressure now, it's a final all of a sudden. And they still play with a smile on their face and enjoy it, which I think they did in the semi-final and the quarter-final, certainly against Iceland. Then I think they should have enough to beat. And it will be quite the party if they do.
Are they favourites?
Massive favourites. I mean, Ronaldo said as much. A lot of people, that phrase favourites, people get a bit hooked up on it going into a match. But France are. They're at home. They were the pre-tournament favourites and they're in the final. So, yeah, they're absolutely the favourites.
Are you backing them to go all the way then?
Yeah, I think they will win the game. I think they might win the game by more than one goal. But to discount Ronaldo might be silly. But, yeah, for me, France will win it. I think it'll be entertaining. I think France might win it 3-1.
Gents, we'll be back.
Hang on, Rob. You scooted out of it before the quarterfinal. Yeah. You've got to give a score prediction.
I think France will win 1-0. And I don't think it'll be as expansive as people are suggesting. I think it might be quite cagey and a set piece for France. Might win it. Although we're seeing Antoine Griezmann in the flesh the other day. He was just unbelievably good.
You do go on with your predictions, Rob.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll just ask you all the questions. 1-0 to France. There you go. Gents, thank you very much. We'll be back. Is that right, Tom, after the final?
I hope so. If I have managed to do my duties that take precedence over the podcast.
There's no such thing. We'll be back after the final with a review of the tournament.
Thanks for listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.